The interceptions, I'm telling you, that they're going to come.
Flacco was under center to start the half. Forsett, the running back. Straight drop by Flacco. Looking. Fires it out to the right side. That is babbled and picked off by Devon House. He bobbled it and then hung on, and Jacksonville gets a takeaway to start the second half. He bobbled it, hung on, picked it off, and Jacksonville starts deep in Baltimore territory near the 26-yard line. Under center is Flacco. Now it's an I formation look. Play fake, rolling to his right. Fires it up the right sideline. Good coverage again by Devon House. He's going to pick it off again. Devon's second interception. He steps out of bounds after picking it off. Back-to-back series, Devon House has an interception. Had great coverage on Chris Givens, and he picks it off at the 6-yard line of Jacksonville. 14 seconds of play, 3rd and 15. Jags from their own 40. Straight drop, 3-man rush. Blake steps up, fires it to the side. That is caught by Julius Thomas, but the clock's going to run. 7 seconds. They're going to have to spike it. That's just it. To get a long field goal off. Can they get it spiked? Doesn't look like Blake falls down. The play is alive. The play is alive. And now he's thrown to the ground, but as a face mask, that would make for an untimed down.
Give credit to Blake Bortles. He got it off, and then to continue the play, even though he slipped, you know, we got the face mask call. Huge play in the game, obviously. But then to come out and hit that field goal for Jason, unbelievable.
This is a 53-yarder from the left hash. Jason Myers for the win. Carson Tinker snapped it. Brian Anger will hold it. The snap and holder good. He kicks it up. This kick is good. This kick is
wow.
Good. The Jaguars have beaten the Ravens on a 53-yard field goal from Jason Myers. Are you kidding me? Jags winning in Baltimore.
Now, from the Jacksonville Orthopedic Institute studios at Everbank Field, 1010XL 92.5 FM presents Jaguars Today with your host Tony Smith and T-Wig.
All right, here we go. We're the only show on the station that gets you started with that kind of hype, right? Like, every day we try to get you hyped up a little bit about Jacksonville Jaguars football. Fat Tony here with you, T-Wig alongside. Mike Dempsey's still up there on vacation. He's getting to the point, though, in that vacation where he's counting down days instead of counting up.
I know it.
You know, like, you start your vacation where you got 13 days or whatever away, and you're like, yeah, man, I got 13 days. When it starts getting down to that 5 or 6, you're like, oh, man, how am I going to enjoy this 5 or 6 days? I know what's looming at the end of this 5 or 6 days. He's getting to about that point of this thing by now, I would think.
You know what? Every time I go on vacation, the good thing about it is the last day of the vacation, I'm always ready to come home.
Mm-hmm.
Because that's wherever I'm vacationing at, I'm having a blast. And I'm doing things that the average person doesn't do. By the way, I think I heard this right. I'm going to give kudos to you guys if it's a fact.
Hmm.
On the opening just then, the Jaguars Today opening.
Mm-hmm.
Did y'all already have my name in there? Did he say Tony Smith with T-Wig?
Tyler, he did. Oh, Tyler's good about this kind of stuff.
Man, you know what? I'm like the brother that just popped in and spent the night on the way somewhere. How the hell y'all get my name in the header already? And you know, you already have the sound.
Tyler puts in the work, man. Like, for anybody who's coming into this room, Tyler's going to have something ready for him for your...
Oh, so he does it for everybody. It wasn't just me.
It wasn't just you.
Oh, like, okay.
Yesterday, we had Uncle Chaps in and got to talk to the kind of jokester of Jaguars Twitter.
You had Chaps in here yesterday?
We did.
Oh, my God.
Yeah, and got inside the head of the prankster, and that was kind of fun, but he even had something for Chaps yesterday. Now, we didn't have anything voiced like that for Chaps, so we actually had to use...
No, we didn't go to the voice guy and
Uncle
request
Chaps saying
Uncle
his own name.
Chaps.
So it was like, with your host, Tony Smith, and Uncle Chaps, like him saying his own name, but we did play a little Careless Whisper for him on the way in. So we took care of him. We'll take care of you too, T-Wig,
good,
as
man.
We get things started here on a Thursday edition of Jaguars Today. Got a ton of stuff to get into here over the course of the next 2 hours, including the fan feedback question of the day, which we already discussed a little bit there with Dan Hicken. It's another one. I like it. Every now and then I come up with one that I'm like, I like this one. And today's question is, who is the most influential Jaguars player or coach of all time, inspired by some stuff that I've been reading here over the last couple of weeks? We're going to get into, we talked last week about Bill Barnwell, put up an article on ESPN.com that talked about the offensive triplets in the league,
mm-hmm.
and the Jags on that list were number 9. Well, today he put up a defensive triplets list, and we'll take a look at where the Jags line up on that and potentially where they could rise to after the 2016 season, hopefully. Also, they're doing like a daily AFC South question of the day, and today, again, pertains obviously to the Jags in that the question of the day today is, can any quarterback in the division surpass Andrew Luck? So the four writers for ESPN's Football Nation all weighing in on that question. We'll weigh in on that as well today. And I don't know if Tyler played that open as the nominee for Frank Frangie in this category. I'm not sure what he came up with.
Exactly. That is one of my favorite Frank calls.
Yeah.
It was a very exciting point in the game. You didn't know what the hell just happened.
But I assume that's the Frank Frangie nominee into this race that we're going to have here a little bit later on today. If you didn't catch, and I know there's a lot of NFL fans listening right now who aren't paying any attention to what's going on in the world of soccer, but right. The Euros yesterday, Iceland scored a goal to win 2-1. It's the first time that nation has ever won a game at a tournament that big. It's such a small country that actually 8% of its population was at the game yesterday when Iceland scored that goal. And we're going to let
and
you...
And that's right at the very end when they scored.
Yeah,
right?
It was the last kick of the game. Yeah. Last kick of the game. And the call is absolutely unbelievable. We're going to let you hear that. We're going to compare it to some Jaguars' great calls and maybe put a little bit of pressure on Franchi that we need to step this thing up. Like, honestly, we need to step this thing up because the level of excitement for that goal is just so far beyond, you know, it's good! Like, it's so far beyond.
I saw it this morning. And
I need tears, Frank.
And I was reading the caption of whatever he was saying. It was unbelievable, man. And it went on and on. You thought it was over, and then all of a sudden, they put another caption up. He's still talking. It's amazing, man.
No, it's great. Have you heard the whole call, I assume? The whole 30 seconds?
I heard the whole thing.
We're going to get to all of it a little bit later on. But, Tyler, if you have the Iceland call ready, we'll play it right here so that the fans can have an idea of what we're going to be comparing some of these Jaguars calls to. Here's the call in the Iceland goal yesterday.
It just scored right there.
Yep. I don't understand a word he said, but I know he's really excited about it.
Fantastic.
It's unbelievable. And look, all I'm saying is we're going to let you hear some of the great calls from Frangie and Sexton and even guys like Gus Johnson. And I love Gus Johnson. And I just, before we even get to that, I'll let you know my thoughts on it. Step it up, football. I mean, seriously, what is this? We love this sport more than any other sport in this country. Can we get a little excitement on the call? My goodness, I want to hear the play-by-play guy crying with emotion when a team scores a big touchdown or a big field goal, as opposed to, it's good! I get it. It's nice to know that the field goal's good. Let me know.
You know, if Frangie does do something like that, he's going to get killed on Twitter. You know that, right, in Jacksonville?
I know.
It'll wear him out. I know a certain group of people that would kill Frangie on Twitter. They put him up with the Jordan crying meme face and everything if he did that.
I'd play it from here to eternity.
Yeah, man, that's my boy.
You know what we could do on Twitter is we could take submissions for a certain catchphrase for Frank Frangie on touchdowns, for field goals, maybe interceptions. We can get some submitted catchphrases for Frank Frangie. We can deliver them right to the man himself.
That's not bad. Mm-hmm. That's not bad. You know, here on this station, we used to have Maurice Jones-Drew on every week.
Right.
We called it Running with MJD.
Mm-hmm.
And I think it was on Tuesday night, so it was his off day. And he'd come in and do an hour-long show with Mike. And every Tuesday, you know, during the season, we'd have Mojo on. And we'd allow fans to call in and suggest whatever dance they wanted to see him do in the end zone that week. And Mo would deliver. Like, he would take all the ideas that everyone gave him. And that week, somebody's idea from that Tuesday night show would be on display on the field that Tuesday. So it's not like we haven't been influential before here on the way that things are celebrated on 1010XL, so why not? I mean, we got the voice of the Jaguars on the station. Why shouldn't we be trying to influence the broadcast even a little bit?
We have the voice and the sideline report.
We got everybody,
man. We got everybody.
No, we got it all.
On 1010XL.
We are the flagship station of the Jacksonville Jaguars, and this is Jaguars Today. We're going to get into that. We'll take a look at Bill Barnwell's defensive triplets as we get things started again. The offensive guys came in at number 9 on the list last week. Where does the defense stack up going into the 2016 season? We'll take a look at that. T-Wig alongside on Fat Tony. We're just getting rolling here on a Thursday edition of Jaguars Today on 1010XL 92.5 FM.
No one covers the Jaguars.
That ball is caught. Julius Thomas, touchdown Jacksonville.
Like 1010XL 92.5 FM, home of the Jaguars.
This is Alan Hearns, and you are listening to Jaguars Today on 1010XL.
One of the featured members there of the Jaguars offensive triplets, Alan Hearns. Maybe my favorite player on the whole team, honestly, is Alan Hearns. Just with the way that he plays, what he had to do to even get himself on the field and get an opportunity as an undrafted guy, to be 2 years into that and earn that four-year, $40 million deal is pretty unreal. But Hearns, one of my favorite guys on the team, a member of those offensive triplets. We're going to take a look at the defensive triplets here in just a moment. Fat Tony here with you. Mike Dempsey still on vacation. T-Wig alongside today. And let's take a look at these triplets. We talked about the offensive guys last week, and the Jags came in at number 9 on that list by Bill Barnwell last week with Bortles, Hearns, and A-Rob, the three guys that they listed. And I thought 9 was pretty fair for the Jags on that kind of list.
Me too, because they have to do it more than once.
Yeah, and left some room for growth for a young group that could move up. I mean, the Steelers triplets is just silly. I don't know how much they got beyond the three, but Roethlisberger, Bell, and Brown.
It's pretty awesome, man. Pretty damn good.
That may be the best running back and wide receiver in the league right now on your team, and a guy who's a top five quarterback in the league, and Ben Roethlisberger. So really strong from the Steelers there. But we mentioned last week when Mike and I were talking about it, if that list went 4 or 5 deep, when you weren't talking triplets, if you were trying to go 4 or 5 deep, Jags are probably solidly in the top 5.
No doubt about that.
Of that kind of list, just with the offensive firepower that they potentially have. Well, yesterday, Bill Barnwell in the afternoon posted the same thing, but on the defensive side of the ball. Now, defense is a little bit trickier to figure out because there's not a quarterback, right? Like, you can't say, okay, I got the quarterback and the other two skill position guys that I really like. There aren't necessarily skill positions on the defensive side of the ball. So he's just trying to basically take the three guys that he thinks are the best defenders on these particular teams. Cleveland, I joked around about it a little bit yesterday, but poor Cleveland, they get to celebrate this parade, and I hope they enjoy it, right? I hope they enjoy it. LeBron James choosing to go back home, win an NBA championship, and I kind of chuckle at the idea that we'll see what the Indians can or can't get done. They're leading the AL Central right now, but if the Indians don't get it done, which who would expect the Indians to win a World Series, that means the next big thing going on in town is the Browns.
Right.
Led by RG3, and they were 32nd on the list of offensive triplets. The Browns, 32nd on the list of defensive triplets, with Joe Hayden, Desmond Bryant, the defensive tackle, and linebacker Paul Kruger as the three guys that he pulled, but ranked them at the bottom of both lists. And look, I think Jaguars fans, as we're going to poke some fun at teams like that are struggling to that degree on these kind of lists, but it's not that long ago.
You know, we used to be the ones getting poked at.
Oh, yeah. It's not that long ago that you would check these lists out just to see if the Jags were ranked anything but 32.
Right.
On that particular, it's like, 31? Yeah! Who's worse than us? Look at those clowns. It wasn't that long ago that the Jags were doing that kind of thing. Where the Jags actually appear on this list, though, Wig, you don't have to scroll very far as the Jags come in at 26 out of the 32 teams in the league. And here's the three players that first, have you looked at the list yet?
I'm looking right at it.
Okay. The three players that they list are free agent acquisition, Malik Jackson, who they list as a defensive end, which he's not going to be here in Jacksonville, but outside linebacker Telvin Smith and cornerback Jalen Ramsey. So they got two guys on this list that have never taken a snap in a Jaguars uniform as the three top defenders on this team.
Yeah, the fact that you can even make an argument, though, bodes well for Jacksonville, because you could debate the fact of Tashawn Gibson being there. I think he's the most important player on the team. I don't know if he's the best defensive player, and I probably doubt that. I think his position, that single high safety, that free safety, that veteran in the back that can cover so much ground, may make him the most important defender on the team, even if he's not the best player. But the fact that you could probably argue 5 or 6 different guys for this, Malik has to be there. I mean, for a team that struggled defensively, you go out and spend nearly $90 million on a football player, and someone doesn't consider him one of the three best players on your defense, then there's something wrong with that.
Sure.
Telvin, production-wise, I totally agree with. And by the way, Telvin might be my favorite player on the team, along with Cedric Marks and Allen Hurns. Jalen Ramsey, a rookie who's never done anything in the NFL yet, and this is all a projection, and I think he's going to be great and fantastic. But still, the fact that he's a rookie and he's on this list. Dante Fowler and Miles Jack are the other two guys who are the honorable mentions, I guess, if you call it that. But the thing that it's positive that you have more options than three people, because some teams may struggle to find three guys that they could list as an effective triplet. But the other thing is it's almost to a microcosm of what has gone on here in the past, where you only have one guy with experience in the top five as a Jaguar, with experience actually playing on the team. That's something tangible that you can point to and say, yeah, Telvin Smith, he's that guy. He's done this over these last couple of years. It's amazing.
No, it really is. And look, even the commentary by Barnwell on this thing, the first sentence of the little capsule with the Jags being here is, no team is poised to fly up these rankings in a year like the Jags, given that they have a bevy of young talent on the roster with Ramsey, Jack, and Dante Fowler Jr., obviously, who missed all last season with the torn ACL. And it's obviously a conversation we've been having for months now in Jacksonville. Since the season ended and we got through the draft, it was like, look at the potential. Like, they're adding three guys that you would think are top five players in the last two drafts to the defense all at one time. So there's this big influx of talent on that side of the ball. We're still not sure exactly what it's going to look like for this Jaguars team when everything is said and done. For me, I'm looking at I went on Our Lads, and I'm looking at the opening day defense for the Jags in 2014. So we're talking just 2 years ago, and you tell me what three guys would even be on this list. Okay, 2 years ago. Obviously, Puzlesny would be a guy that you're pulling out. That's probably the number one guy on the defense a couple years ago. But just looking at who it was, Red Bryant, Roy Miller, who had just gotten here, Cedric Marks, Chris Clemens, Geno Hayes, Paul Puzlesny, Leroy Reynolds, Dwayne Grotz,
he's solid.
Jonathan Cyprian, Winston Guy, and Alan Ball.
Amazing.
That was the starting 11 for this Jaguars team.
How many of those guys are still in the league?
Cedric is here.
Cedric is here. Roy Clemens, is here.
Clemens is in Seattle.
Is Geno anywhere?
Alan Ball, is he still in the league? He was with the Bears recently. I know that.
That's a good question. It's a very good question.
I'm not sure.
I think
where
Winston
Geno
Guy
was.
Is still in Indy, isn't he?
He is, yeah.
Right.
But he didn't play much when he got up there. There's not a whole lot of guys on this list that, unless they're in a Jaguars uniform, are playing much. That's for sure. So the three guys 2 years ago would be what? Puzlesny. We didn't really know much about Marks at that point, but maybe if you want to give Marks a nod. And then I don't even know what to tell you. Red Bryant?
Roy Miller. Roy Miller's really played well, though. He played really
He was really good
last
year. But when you're talking about going into the 2014 season and trying to make that kind of list, I know when we get to this date in football history, we're going to talk about a couple of Jaguars-specific birthdays today. And one of those birthdays is going to be Josh Scobie. And I go back to doing this show with Mike in 2013 when Gus Bradley got here, and asking fans a question as simple as, who are the five best players on this roster? And the roster was in such a shape that if you were going to ask fans who are the five best players on this roster, they would list Puzlesny. Everybody would list Puzlesny.
Mm-hmm.
Most people would list Justin Blackmon still at that point.
Even, Meester probably.
Yeah.
Because he was a name that everyone knew.
Even if you never knew if Blackmon was going to be back on the field, Scobie would be on that list.
Yep.
Virtually everyone would have Scobie on
a
that
kicker.
List. And it was at a point with the roster where everyone was like, yeah, the kicker is that important on this team right now. And now it's kind of an afterthought. They have so many good players on this roster compared to where they've been the last couple of years. It really is incredible the way they've built it here in the last
Now, I will
years.
Say this. The five guys that they mentioned, the three that they consider triplets, along with the two guys that what I call the honorable mention guys.
Sure.
You have to mention this part, too, though. Of those five, only one of them's ever played here.
True.
So, you know, Fowler, obviously, with the injury last year, and then everyone else is a new addition. So, we're not so far removed away from that that we can't acknowledge the fact that this offseason is where they really, really put it all together. And Jalen's on the list. I love him. I love where he's picked. I love his attitude. Of course, I love where he played at in college.
No doubt.
This is a new ball game, though. You think T.Y. Hilton's going to just concede that? You think DeAndre Hopkins is going to say, okay, yeah, he's a great player. I'm not going to go out here and try to skunk him like I did everybody else. It's not going to happen. In the NFL, man, it's all about – it's like the state of Missouri. You got to show me. And you're going to get beat sometimes. You're going to make mistakes sometimes. Things are going to happen. You know, as much as we love Tashaun Gibson and talk about how important he is, he probably gave up some plays last year. You know, he was back there in that secondary with Joe Hayden, right?
Joe Hayden's
an all-pro. Okay, they gave up stuff. Things happen. So I'm not trying to pour water on the fire as much as it is that I'm trying to remain realistic. The first time Jalen Ramsey gets beat for a touchdown, there's some people that's going to want to jump off a bridge or claim that he's a bust, and that's not the way it goes.
No, that's the way fandom works, and, mm-hmm. and we understand that to some degree. I think when you're putting together this many new faces on a defense and trying to make it work, they're, especially with as young as the pieces that they're going to be throwing in there with Ramsey and Jack and Fowler, there's going to be times where those guys get beat. And it's why there are questions for me specifically about what are the expectations going to be inside that building mm-hmm. for the first month of the season on defense. I've said it the week after the draft when everything was kind of settling down. I wouldn't want to have to play this Jaguars team in the second half of 2016. I don't know how scared of them I'm going to be in the first 6-8 weeks of the 2016 season, but I think the second half, because of all the talent they're bringing on, there's the potential for them to be scary on that side of the football.
I'll play devil's advocate and go on the other side. If I'm an offensive coordinator, and I look at the Jaguars, I know what they want to do. They want to put you in long down and distance situations. They want to be able to pin their ears back with those outside guys and get in their sub package and play the nickel and force you into making mistakes with that great secondary or the number of bodies that they have that we think will be great.
Mm-hmm.
So you know what I do? I go the totally other way. And that's why I'm going to be interested to watch that Tennessee game. I pound them. Right now, with the way that the Jaguars are built, if I'm the other side, I try to run the ball down their throat. I throw them first down to try to get 4 or 5 yards in the flat to the tight end every single time. And then I sit there and I literally run the ball 45 times a game. I think that is the most effective way to attack them right now. So that's just playing the other side of it. And what that is, that's showing the amount of respect that I have for the secondary, for the additions on the defense. And I'm in the minority when I think they've addressed the pass rush enough, because they have Ngakoue. Of course, they have Fowler coming back. Neither of them have played, but they seem like they have the physical makeup to give you what you need. But what they've done is they've addressed the interior of the defensive line, mm-hmm. and it'll get the quarterback out of that pocket and force him to run out to the edge. And then all of those young speed guys that they have, even if it's Telvin or Jack coming on a blitz, it's going to create situations where the quarterback isn't comfortable. And that starts with Malik Jackson and Jared Odrick and, of course, Cedric Marks right up the middle.
And, look, in regards to your comment there, I think – the question, this entire offseason defensively has been about third down for the Jags.
Yes.
It's been about getting after the passer, being more solid on the back end so that you can allow yourself to make some plays on third down. So from a Jaguars perspective, I don't think you're wrong in the way that teams may want to attack this team. I think if they can be the same kind of team they were on first and second down last year, that's why all these additions matter mm-hmm. so much. Because mm-hmm. teams may want to attack them that way, but may not be able to. And now you may have teams that come in and have a game plan that's just not going to work against this Jaguars team. And that hasn't been the case since Gus Bradley got here. Where the other teams in the AFC South line up here on the defensive triplets, Indianapolis in at 25, Vontae Davis, Mike Adams, Arthur Jones, the three guys that they list for Indianapolis, one spot ahead of the Jacksonville Jaguars. Tennessee comes in at 23, Jarrell Casey, Brian Arakpo, and Jason McCourty. The three guys listed for them, Houston, not surprisingly, the number one team in the division. But where do you think they wind up on this kind of list, Wig?
Houston?
Yeah.
10th?
They got the best player in the league on defense.
I would say 10th because of that. Oh, they're 7th.
They're 7th.
Yeah.
J.J. Watt, Jonathan Joseph, Whitney Mercilus, the top three guys on that defense. And that's with having the best defensive player in the league, and there's really no question about who's number one on defense right now in the league, even if it does aggravate a bunch of our listeners. I'm talking to you, Duval Doom. Mm-hmm. They do not like J.J. Watt, but even with him, they are 7th on this list. The top five teams, the New York Jets come in at five, Darrell Revis.
Look at their three.
Yeah, Sheldon Richardson, Muhammad Wilkerson, the three for them. For number four, Arizona, talking about looking at three, Patrick Peterson, Calais Campbell, Chandler Jones, they just added.
That doesn't include Honey Badger.
It does not. Carolina, Luke Kuechly, Thomas Davis, Kawan Short. Number two, Von Miller, DeMarcus Ware, and Chris Harris with the Denver Broncos. And number one, still the Seattle Seahawks, Richard Sherman, Earl Thomas, Michael Bennett. Woof. That's
no Bobby Wagner, no Cliff Avril. That shows you how good they are.
Oh,
those guys,
so
those guys are top three on any other team.
Yeah. Yeah.
Maybe not Denver. And maybe a couple of other ones, but still, you get my point.
And the difference between, I'll have to go back and look at the offensive list, but the difference between the offensive and defensive list, just as I look at it, is you have to go pretty deep before you find teams that weren't in serious playoff contention on the defensive list on this list, as far as listing the top-end talent. The Jaguars were nowhere near playoff contention. They were listed as number nine on the triplets list. Number nine on this list is the Rams, so you can make the same kind of argument there. The Lions came in at number eight. We'll get into the AFC South question right now on ESPN.com. They're asking today, can any quarterback in the division surpass Andrew Luck? We'll get you the reaction from the writers for the AFC South as well as our reaction. Is anybody in the AFC South, heck, is anybody here in Jacksonville ready to surpass Andrew Luck as the best quarterback in the division? We'll also try to squeeze in some of your phone calls. If you want to get involved with the program, you can, 641-1010. Also, you can always text in on the text line driven by Duval Ford at 641-1010. Fat Tony here with you, T-Wig alongside. Here on a Thursday edition of Jaguars Today on 1010XL, 92.5 FM.
Now, more Jaguars Today on 1010XL, 92.5 FM.
Rolling along on a Thursday. Thanks for joining us today. Fat Tony, T-Wig alongside Mike Dempsey on vacation. He'll be back a week from today. I'm pretty sure he's back in studio next Thursday.
One and done, right? He comes back for one show, and then he leaves for the rest of the month.
Well, he did that. He did that already. He came back for one show.
He did. He came back for...
Next week is the end of the month, apparently.
Yeah, right? It is. Well, what's happening is he's back next Thursday, so we'll be on Thursday and Friday next week, and then it's the 4th of July holiday, so he gets a three-day weekend. So he's coming back for 2 days, and then he gets a three-day weekend.
Do we have an update on where in the world Mike Dempsey is? Yesterday it was Jackson, Wyoming, I believe.
I think he tweeted out something this morning.
What is he doing? Was he in Yellowstone?
He's in the middle of nowhere, USA.
He was in Wyoming yesterday, yeah. I think he's in Montana today. He said big sky country, so I assume that means Montana. I have no idea. That's what he tweeted out this morning anyway. He was in Wyoming yesterday morning, staying at some cabin, so... Good for him, man. Enjoy it. Enjoy the time with the family. Seeing parts of this country that I haven't had the opportunity to go see yet and would love to there in the Midwest with Yellowstone. And I know he went to the Grand Canyon earlier this week. I think he was there over the weekend. I know they went whitewater rafting down the Colorado River at some point this week.
Ain't getting no raft with Dempsey.
Ain't
getting no
that?
Raft with Dempsey. Ain't getting no plane with Jack O'Brien. It's what it is. I got to share something. I've told you. Already, Tyler, you may not know. You're looking at my face, and you notice I don't look the same.
Mm-hmm. What's up?
I'm on that apple cider vinegar, right? Where I drink like 2 or 3 tablespoons every morning.
Just to help you lose weight, or what's this about?
It's for whatever, Tony. It's just to help me. Don't be telling everybody I'm fat.
At first, I thought you were going to say apple cider moonshine.
You got like a bad heart. What's going on?
You know what happened, though.
I'm worried about you, Wade. That's why I ask these questions.
You're supposed to put that stuff in water. I was in a rush. And I drank it straight, if I'm hitting scotch.
Yeah, that's.
I haven't
idea.
Recovered yet. I'm still hurting. It feels like my insides are on fire.
I don't doubt it.
I am. It is not a great feeling. Trust me. No, so if I run out of here, down the hallway to that room down there, you know what it's all about, brother. It ain't you. It's me. Okay.
You drank the closest thing I think to drinkable acid that you possibly could. If you're gonna drink that highly concentrated. Some kind of fruit juice. You don't need that in your life, man.
Man, I've got to start diluting this.
Yeah, you need to drink a ton of water.
But I'm not getting in a raft with Dempsey.
Why not?
I'm just not doing it.
Okay.
I don't really need an explanation. It just doesn't feel like that goes together.
You feel like Dempsey is the type of guy who's going to look for that little rocking of the boat as an excuse to knock you out?
I don't think he's going to look for
and
it.
Then
I
ask just you think, if the water is really as cold as it looks.
I think that damn boat's just going to rock anyway. I don't think he's going to actually try to do it. I just think it's going to happen. I ain't trying to be in a boat with Dempsey.
Have you ever done the whitewater rafting thing?
No.
Oh, it's amazing.
No. In fact, I don't know a brother that has done that. Tony, I'm going to just be honest.
No, it's pretty amazing, man.
It looks amazing. It looks incredibly amazing. I'll watch you guys do it.
I had the first time I ever went whitewater rafting. It was in North Georgia. It was on a church trip, and we got to go caving, and we got to go do a couple other things, but whitewater rafting was part of it. And I had a crazy guide. I mean, I had the crazy guide. There's always one in the group, you know, that's really nuts if you've done it more than once. But I had a crazy guide. He had a beard down to basically his stomach. His name was Moses. I'm still not convinced that was his real name, but just the one he took on to be the whitewater guide, right? So I'm sitting there. You go through all the training. You know, you do whatever the guy tells you to do. And we're coming up on a rapid, and I'm watching everybody else in my church group go over to the left, all right, where we're veering over to the right. And Moses yells at all of us in the raft. He's like, all right, you guys, y'all want to go the man way or the sissy way down this rapid? And I'm like, I don't care. Man way. Let's do the man way. So everyone else is drifting over to the left. We're drifting over to the right. And what he told us was, you're going to paddle as long as I tell you to paddle. And when I tell you to get down, you get down into the bottom of the boat or you're going to get flipped into this rapid. So again, it's my first time ever on a river like this. That's nice. A little terrifying.
Nice job, Moses.
We're already in this thing now. There's nothing I can do about it at this point. Moses has guided me into this rapid. There's nothing else I can do except follow his instruction. I didn't even see the thing. I heard it, but I did not see the rapid. He's telling me, row, row, row. He's yelling at us, and all of a sudden he screams, get down. So I slammed out on the ground. I was airborne. I kid you not, I was airborne in the raft. Like, the only thing that kept me in the raft were that my feet were securely placed in front of, like, the row in front of me. Mm-hmm. But I still flew over to the right. The raft, like, slammed down to the right side. I flew over to the right. I was on the left side of the raft. I knocked the guy to the right out of the boat because he didn't get down quick enough. So then I'm trying to help that guy get out of the rapid. Let me tell you, I've had experiences where I felt like I was close to, like, something really tragic happening to me a couple times in my life. If I could have those, like, moments and know I was going to be safe,
yeah,
it's, like, the coolest thing of all time. Like, you know, like, those, I've been close to a mortar, like a firework, when it exploded on the ground, like, 8 feet from me. Mm-hmm. And the feeling of that thing, like, if I could repeat the feeling of that thing, knowing that I was going to be safe as opposed to I might die here in the next couple of seconds, it's the coolest thing in the world.
Yeah, there's something wrong with you too. I'm just gonna put that out there. Something wrong with you too, man. I'm not getting in no boat with Dempsey. That's all I'm gonna do.
Thrill seeker.
Yeah, that's where I'm gonna leave that at, right there.
I would do the skydiving, despite the fact that I think I'd pass out as soon as I jumped out of the plane.
I don't get a thrill out of. We're gonna talk some football here in a minute.
Yeah,
I just don't get a thrill out of scaring the hell out of myself.
I do.
I don't, man.
I do. I like the horror movies. I like the thrill stuff. Like, the first time I went rappelling on the side of a mountain, I went really slow the first time. And the second time, I basically just leaped off the side of the cliff and let that rope go, man. I was free falling. It was amazing. I love doing that kind of stuff. If I feel like I know I'm going to be safe at the end of it. Like roller coasters, that kind of thing. You don't do roller coasters either?
Nope.
Man, that's crazy.
I ain't bungee jumping. I'm not jumping out no airplane. None of that stuff, man. I don't understand what the deal is with it, man. I'm like, I can find a few ways. I tell you what, y'all need to just hang around me. I'll find a few ways to have fun that don't include you scaring the hell out of yourself.
Thrill seeking. Show me the T-Wig version of thrill seeking.
I have to do it off the air, but okay. I can guarantee you.
All right.
I'll pull this phone out and I'll show you some thrill seeking.
All right. He's going to do that here in just a moment. And we're going to get into this state in football history, the Honda drive around the NFL next here on a Thursday edition of Jaguars Today. Fat Tony, T-Wig alongside the fan feedback spotlight. Question of the day today. We're asking you Jaguars fans in the Tom Bush fan feedback spotlight question. Simply, who is the most influential Jaguars player or coach of all time? Influential player or coach of all time in the history of the Jacksonville Jaguars. We'll get to some of your answers a little bit later on in the program, including some of my own. I have a guy in mind for my answer, and I have not seen him mentioned yet. I will explain that a little bit later on. This state in football history, Honda driver on the NFL, coming up next here on Jaguars Today.
From the Jacksonville Orthopedic Institute studios at Everbank Field, this is Jaguars Today. And now, this date in football history.
It's State in Football History presented by Dr. James McCullough's Comprehensive and Cosmetic Dentistry located on Gate Parkway. If you need cosmetic work done or if you're just in the market for a family dentist, call Dr. McCall today at 904-620-9225. Dr. McCall is a certified Invisalign provider. Visit jamesjmccall.com for a complete list of comprehensive care services. As far as what we got on this date in football history, I mentioned Josh Scobie earlier on in the program, 34 years old today, celebrating his birthday, the Jaguars' all-time leading scorer with 1,022 points in a Jags uniform. I can remember, again, back in 2013, we were asking fans for the list of the top five players on the team that year. Scobie's name came up a ton. One other Jaguars current player celebrating a birthday today, James Sample, the safety, 24 years old, fourth-round pick of the Jags last year. Obviously competing with Jonathan Cyprian for that strong safety spot here in Jacksonville this season. Reggie Nelson. Nope, not that Reggie Nelson. Mm-hmm. This is the offensive tackle Reggie Nelson, who was drafted in the fifth round by San Diego in 1999. He turns 40 today. He does have a Jaguars connection, which is why I mentioned that just because of the name. Nelson appeared in one game for the Jags in 2000. That was the last appearance of his short two-year career. And the biggest birthday on this date, LaDainian Tomlinson, 37 years old today, fifth overall pick in the 2001 NFL Draft, five-time Pro Bowler, three-time first-team All-Pro, played in all 16 games, rushed for 1,000 yards, and scored 10-plus touchdowns in each of his first eight seasons. Played all 16 games, rushed for 1,000, scored 10-plus touchdowns in each of his first 8 years in the league, including 2006 when he won the NFL's MVP award and the Walter Payton Man of the Year award, after he rushed for over 1,800 yards and 28 rushing touchdowns, adding another 56 catches for 500-plus yards receiving, with three touchdowns receiving for a total of 31 touchdowns scored in 2006. Tomlinson is a member of the Pro Football Hall of Fame's All-2000s First Team. LT retired after 2011 season, meaning he's eligible for election to the Hall of Fame this year in 2016. I'm going to ask you now, T-Wig.
Mm-hmm.
I mentioned that LaDainian Tomlin is a member of the first team of the All-2000s team. Who are the other three running backs on that All-2000s team?
On the All-2000s team? That is a great, great question. Adrian Peterson?
No.
He's not on the 2000s? Oh, okay.
They don't have him on that list, no.
It's a good question. Three running backs on the All-2000s team. Edger and James.
He's the other first-team guy.
A lot of pressure here, T-Wig.
It is a lot of pressure. And this goes to show you, he did not give me time to think about it.
No,
he didn't. He did not warn me.
This is how the pop quizzes work on this show. I like being on this side of it. Dempsey does this to me all the time. You want a hint? I can give you a couple hints.
Yeah, give me
guys.
A hint.
This guy scored 7 touchdowns on a Monday night.
Still don't know who it is.
Sean Alexander.
Okay.
And the other guy is the rush for 2,000 yards.
Jamal Lewis?
Jamal Lewis.
Okay.
Those are the four guys. LaDainian Tomlinson, Edgerrin James, your first team guys. Jamal Lewis, Sean Alexander, the second team guys on the Pro Football Hall of Fame's All 2000s team. I'm pretty sure Adrian Peterson's probably going to make the 2010s team.
Should.
Would be my guess.
Yes.
There's no doubt about that. That is this date in football history.
Now the Honda Drive Around the NFL, brought to you by your First Coast Honda dealers.
Former tight end Richard Gordon was arrested on battery charges Tuesday after allegedly punching his girlfriend. The former Miami Hurricane tight end was most recently with the Broncos about 4 years ago. Was also charged with battery on a law enforcement officer, according to the police report. He's being held on $6,000 bond. Police responded after witnesses reported seeing a woman being punched and pushed out of a Mercedes SUV. The woman told police she lived with Gordon and had a 3-year-old child with him, but that he began acting crazy after she began taking him to pick up his car, which was parked at a strip club. They also found an AR-15 with some ammunition and a small amount of marijuana in his car. The report said he intended to shoot up the strip club after having a confrontation there the night before. So some scary stuff there involving former tight end Miami Hurricane Richard Gordon. A Texas state senator who has been on both Des Bryant's attorney and his landlord is suing Bryant, claiming that Bryant trashed a rental home. Royce West is a state senator who represents a precinct in Dallas, filed a lawsuit against Des Bryant last week, saying They rented a house from him and that he found littered with trash and feces, missing blinds and shutters with cracked windows and blackened carpeting after Bryant moved out back in January. So that is a weird story that he represented him in two cases in 2011 and 2012, and now he's suing him after he basically trashed a rental house. What's up with these superstars in the NFL? Well, I guess we didn't call Johnny Manziel a superstar, but what's up with these high-profile players just trashing rental houses?
Well, how could you live like that, though? That's the question. My mom and my
grandmother. There was feces in the house.
Yeah, that's what
are you doing?
They would be upset with me just because you're being nasty. That's dirty. I can't live in filth, man. Who does that? Really?
I don't know. I don't get it either. That's crazy. I actually had a friend come over to my place a couple weeks ago, and they walked in, and they were like, because it's me and my roommate. We're both bachelors. We're both single guys. Mm-hmm. And they walk in, they're like, you got two single guys living in it? It's so clean.
Oh, they expect it to smell like feet and locker room, right?
They expect it to smell like a dorm room.
F&A.
Yeah.
Foot and arse.
No, we don't got any of that going on. Our place is clean, man, for sure.
Speaking of Johnny Manziel, police in Dallas say free agent quarterback Johnny Manziel reported a hit-and-run collision earlier this week. His publicist, Denise Michaels, said the former Cleveland player told her he hit his head but did not have a concussion or any injury becoming from the traffic accident. She added that his car was T-boned and the other driver did leave the scene of the accident, and he is facing a misdemeanor assault charge from a domestic violence case involving his former girlfriend from a few months ago, and a status hearing is scheduled for this Friday, but he is not scheduled to appear or required to appear in court. Pete Carroll had some praise for your boy, Tony Russell Wilson. He has made a clear step forward. His command is at an all-time rate for Russell Wilson. His ability to move defenders with his eyes, set up some things, he's consistently doing that almost unconsciously, saying Pete Carroll. This is year 5. It has all taken him time to get to this point. He's still going to improve, but you can really see him as a true vet now. Also, a Russell Wilson side note here, Tony. He was spotted at a Seattle airport a few days ago reading a book entitled Winning 101.
I think he may need like the 401 class or something. He's a Super Bowl champion. He's played in 2 Super Bowls. I think it's time for Russell Wilson to move past 101.
Better stop messing with them rappers in Atlanta. That's what he needs to stop doing with those kids and getting involved in all of that foolishness. He better stay above the, above board. Don't be beefing with those rappers, man.
No, that's a bad idea.
Wasn't beefing with rappers one of the main reasons why Bruce Irvin didn't go home to Atlanta?
Might be.
He was afraid of the scene back home, right?
Yeah, might be. Rap won't have much to do with it. Might be also the reason Kevin Durant won't go back to D.C. Doesn't want to go home. I don't blame him.
Toughest place to go is home, man.
Yeah, I wouldn't go home.
No.
You give me $100 million and see how fast I get out of here. I'm just telling you.
You never see me again. You may never hear from me again. I'm not even going to have Twitter. You give me $100 million, I'm off the grid, bro. You'll never hear from me again.
I'll be like Dempsey in a different state every day.
Oh, yeah.
One final story here. Titans linebacker Derek Morgan has joined Eugene Monroe and asking the NFL to research cannabis's potential benefits on long-term health. He's saying, I feel like the NFL has a responsibility to at least look into it, to delegate time and money to research it for its players, he told Yahoo Global News. Given how much influence the NFL has on society, I think it would be for the greater good. There's a lot of people suffering and a lot of people that can benefit from cannabis as a medical treatment. So that's kind of the second player, although he's not. Is Derek Morgan still active, right?
Yes.
Now there's 2 active players, Eugene Monroe and Derek Morgan, who are now on the record saying they're pro. At least saying, look into it. Get some sort of effort to research this type of thing.
I think eventually it's going to be accepted. It's still a long way off. Look, medical marijuana isn't even accepted in all the states across this great union of ours yet. Until that gets to a reality, I don't think the NFL is going to even consider that kind of thing. It's just, that's not how the NFL works. The NFL is not the frontline guys with this kind of stuff.
Mm-hmm.
They are reactionary to everything that is happening around them. As I continue to say, if you want to know where the NFL is as far as the way they treat players with this kind of thing, they have one of their star wide receivers in the league that is trying to get off a suspension because he had a drink on an airplane. That's where the NFL is right now.
Mm-hmm.
And they're not going to be progressive when it comes to the way that a league is going to treat marijuana. It's just not going to happen.
I'm not on either side of whether or not they should legalize it. I tell you what I will do. If they do legalize it, I'm going to open a convenience store and sell potato chips and cereal.
No doubt.
I'm going to get paid.
Some honey buns, maybe
right
some
next
Star
to
Crunch.
That's right.
As far away from a Taco Bell as you can get. You gotta strategically locate it as far away from like Taco Bell's and Crystal's as you can.
Just do what Peyton Manning did, just open a bunch of Papa John's.
Right. Mm-hmm. You gotta spread it out. And you gotta work with those places. You gotta be like, okay, you get this block, I got the next block with potato chips.
Cereal and chips.
And it's gonna be drive through. We're gonna have a drive through for potato chips.
I'm gonna have a drive through where I give you a bowl of cereal.
That's nice.
Yeah.
That's very nice.
Milk, spoon, and everything, ready to go.
That's not bad at all. The text line driven by Duval Ford, some people reacting to the whole vinegar thing and the whitewater rafting thing here, Wig. From the 891, Wig, you'll be okay. I've done that vinegar thing. It just hurts for a couple hours, then you'll be all right. So
thank you.
From someone else here, Wig, you're a man after my own heart. No rock climbing or parachuting for me either, but I do like driving my boat at 75 miles an hour. I guess everyone is nuts in one way or another. There's no doubt about that. From the 422, been skydiving twice, and it kicks rafting's ass. It's crazy. Best thing. T-Wig, get a little wild, bro. And I would do the skydiving thing. Like, I'm convinced that I'm going to pass out as soon as I leave the plane. That's why they strap you to somebody else. You get, like, an instructor with you the first time.
Have you thought about who you guys would do it with? Would it be one of you? And Tony, in your case, would it be your co-host, Mike?
No.
T-Wig, would it be Rick or Joe or maybe even Hacker?
Chad Scott could probably convince me to do something like that.
Right.
Don't ask me why. For some reason, he's like, you know, he's convinced me to do a lot of things a certain way. But I wouldn't do you. Did you just ask me if I'd do it with anybody on Midday Chalk?
That was the question.
Those would be the last three Rick fools I get on an airplane and jump out of an airplane with. Trust me.
I'll jump out of a plane with you, Wig.
You will?
Yeah.
Well, you ain't got to worry about doing it because it ain't happening, bro. You know what, though? In all seriousness, when I was in the military, we used to have to jump out of a plane while it was still moving. Mm-hmm. It was on the ground, though, but as an exercise.
Sure.
You know, that's about as much adventure as I got. Now, when I was young, I was fearless.
Tuck and roll in there?
Oh, I did everything. Mm-hmm. But now, I'm just... You know, I'm kind of like that laid back dude now. You know, I just don't want to do anything like that.
No, I hear you. I understand that the wildness gets taken out of you a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
You know, with that kind of thing, I get it. It's just not out of me yet. The wildness is still there a little bit for me, despite the fact that I have learned based on the roller coaster rides that I've been on. Like every now and then, you get asked the ridiculous question of like, if you could have a superpower, what superpower would it be? Right. Mm-hmm. And a lot of people say I would want to be able to fly. No way. I have learned, like, doing, like, the Superman ride where they strap you in, where your stomach and, like, you're facing the ground. I've done that ride twice. I've had to hold back vomit twice mm-hmm. on that ride. Like, as soon as it started, I just get motion sick. I'm mm-hmm. like, and I know for a fact that if I could ever be offered a superpower, it would not be the gift of flight because all I would be was sick all the time. I couldn't even use my gift.
I would be invisible.
Like forever?
No, I'd be able to be invisible when I felt like it.
Okay.
There's no telling what I get into.
Oh my God, I have.
No, I'm serious.
I've told my friends for years, if I ever had the opportunity, if I could be invisible for a day, I would mess with a friend of mine to the point that they were convinced that they would believe in ghosts after I'm done with them mm-hmm. for a day. And I like when I came back, when I was back to being visible again and I'd screwed with them for an entire day where they didn't sleep, I didn't sleep, I was just messing with somebody for an entire day, I would deny everything that they said happened. I would accuse them of lying. I would say there's no way that's actually what occurred. I have some friends that I wouldn't mess with because they're usually armed. And so I don't want them shooting at me while I'm invisible. But if I could be invisible for a day, I'm telling you, somebody would be convinced that ghosts are real for sure.
Maybe that's what happened to Bobby Brown. Did you hear about his upcoming book and his excerpt that made headlines recently?
No.
Mm-hmm.
Bobby Brown said that he had a sexual encounter with a ghost.
Oh.
And it was not a dream. He swears by this. Bobby Brown swears that he had a sexual encounter with a female ghost.
I got one word to describe.
The technical term there is a succubus.
I got one word that'll describe that.
That's a real word.
Crack. That's what makes you think that you had relations with a ghost. Crack.
Maybe.
Bobby.
How do you know? I've seen Ghostbusters. It happens. It happens from time to time. I don't know. Bobby Brown's nuts, though.
Bobby says this was before he ever did any hard drugs. It was only
no one believes anything that anyone says that ever did any hard drugs. you no longer have any legitimacy to anything you ever say. Like, the first moment you try crack, I don't trust you. Like, I'm never going to trust anything you ever tell me again about something that in reality happened. We're going to get back into some football, I swear. That's coming up next. We're going to get into some of the play-by-play highlights, comparing some of them, and just, honestly, Jacksonville demanding more out of the people that are calling the play-by-play highlights for the Jacksonville Jaguars, as well as get into the question, can any quarterback in this division, the AFC South, surpass Andrew Luck, as we continue along on a Thursday edition of Jaguars Today on 1010XL 92.5 FM.
From the Jacksonville Orthopedic Institute studios at Everbank Field, more Jaguars Today on 1010XL 92.5 FM.
Fat Tony T-Wig here with you on Jaguars Today. Wanted to get into some of the play-by-play stuff coming out of the Iceland goal. We played it early on in the program. We'll let you hear that one more time, as well as let you hear some of the big moments in the NFL, not only for the Jaguars, but some of the big plays here in the last calendar year.
Someone on the Duval Ford text line said the Iceland call made their ears bleed.
That guy was really excited.
Like, yeah, he was.
And honestly, when we play the thing again, I'll set it up a little bit better, but for the first 10 seconds, the goal hadn't even happened. Like, the guy hadn't scored for the first 10 seconds of this thing, which makes it that much more unbelievable. But before we get to that, the ESPN NFL Nation guys tackling a question of the day right now. The question today, can any quarterback in the division surpass Andrew Luck? And so whoever the team is that they're kind of focused on with the question, that guy doesn't usually answer it. So it'll be the other three who cover, in this case, it would be Tennessee, Houston, and Jacksonville. Their three writers would answer whether or not they think anybody can surpass Andrew Luck. And all three said no, that they don't believe anybody in the division, no quarterback in the division, is going to surpass Andrew Luck this year. I think sometimes we forget just how big a commodity Luck was going into the 2015 season. Here's a guy who had won 10 games in the regular season each of his first 3 years, had advanced one round further in the playoffs each of his first 3 years, including the Deflategate championship game 2 years ago with the Indianapolis Colts. Obviously, a lot of injuries last year. Wasn't the same kind of player from a statistical standpoint when he was on the field for Indianapolis last year either. But I know, Wig, you said you were thinking about Andrew Luck just here in the last couple days. With this question, can any quarterback in the division surpass Andrew Luck? I think the most likely candidate for 2016, at least, would be Blake Bortles, but I'm not positive. Like, if you put me on a scale of 0 to 100, I'm not sure how confident I am that when everything is said and done, Blake is better than Luck in 2016.
I think Andrew Luck's getting a bad rap, and it comes from me being a guy that thought that he was getting overblown early. And what I mean by that is, after his first couple of years, Tony, people elevated him to the point where, and I understand why they did it, because they were looking at it as if he was going to continue to improve. But they had him in the same category. It was the category right underneath Luck, Manning, Breeze, and Aaron Rodgers, you know, the big four. He was right there, right behind him. And people had him there. And I said that he threw too many picks in big games, especially the ones in the playoffs involving the Patriots. It's just that I saw too many games where there were three interceptions, and that was bothersome. And I was telling folks that they needed to hit their brakes. Well, now I think they're doing him a disservice on the other side because of one injury-riddled season. You know, you can't look at the fact that a guy was injured and then say, well, when he was healthy, he wasn't playing well. He was never healthy. That was the problem. He was hurt while he was playing. He did not have a running game. Everyone knows they had a horrible offensive line. And then the continuity in the coaching staff, they fired their coordinator, Pep Hamilton. And then there was the thought that, you know, nobody knew what the front office was going to do between the general manager and the head coach. All of that stuff added up to a bad season, and now they barely have the guy in the top 100 in the NFL, and I think that's going too far the other way. Andrew Luck, in my opinion, is still a top 7 or 8 quarterback in the NFL.
Mm-hmm.
One season didn't change it. You can't bring up all of these reasons why the coach were bad and then not think that he was going to also be bad as well.
Andrew Luck is a player, and I agree with everything you're saying, Wig. Andrew Luck is still a player that if you were to put every player in the NFL into a pool and say you're starting your franchise today, I think there are a lot of NFL GMs that would make Andrew Luck the number one overall pick.
No doubt about it.
And I still think he's that type of player, that type of talent. And look, we talk to Jaguars fans on here every day. And Jaguars fans want to give Andrew Luck a hard time because, he was just dominating the division and the division sucked. So that's how he's getting all those wins. Look, he's going 6-0 against the division every year, right? But that doesn't mean that he's terrible outside of it. He's about a .500 quarterback outside of that. Well, maybe he figures out how to beat some of these other teams too.
Mm-hmm.
And that's not really Andrew Luck's fault that the AFC South was as bad as it was for his first 3 years in the league. I think he's a super talented guy. I tend to agree with the idea that maybe he was a little bit overhyped.
Yeah.
Because he was a guy that for 2 years in college was being talked about as the number one overall draft pick. Everyone knew where he was going to be drafted. When he goes to Indianapolis and he's basically picking up the mantle of Peyton Manning in Indianapolis, the expectations soared for that guy. And all he did in response to all those expectations was win 11 games every year. That's all.
He just couldn't beat New England.
Yeah.
Remember now, that whole deflate gate, that started in the AFC Championship game.
Yep.
That's where the Colts were, folks. They were in the AFC Championship game with this kid. And people seem to want to just forget about it because, and these are smart people. These aren't just people that are in fandom, Tony. These are smart individuals that should know better. Watch Andrew Luck. Just watch him.
Yeah.
He's going to come right back this year, and you're going to remember why he was elite. And as much as I root for the Jaguars to get it right for the city, and as much as I like Blake Bortles because I'm close enough to see what he is and what type of person he is, I think it's almost, I don't want to have a bunch of hyperbole here, but historically, when a guy has one good season and now you're starting to mention him in the same breath as another guy who's had two or three, that's usually wrong.
It's
dangerous. You don't do that. You don't even compare those two guys. Just remember now, not this past season, it was 30-0 at halftime, and Luck had a lot to do with that.
Yes, he did. There's no doubt about it, and we'll see what kind of bounce back year Andrew Luck has. I'm with you, Wig. I think it's going to be good this year in Indianapolis. How good is the team around him? I don't know, but I don't think whatever failures Indianapolis has this year is going to be because Andrew Luck isn't good enough to get them to whatever level they can be at. He's elevated that team through his first 3 years. I think he'll do the same thing this year. I just don't know how much talent there is to elevate in Indianapolis, even compared to the previous years when he was there, especially with Jacksonville's better, Houston's better, Tennessee's better. The other teams in this division are better, and I think them closing up ground is going to show up when everything is said and done in the standings to at least some degree. How much? We'll find out when the 2016 season actually gets started. I want to get to this play-by-play deal, as obviously the excitement from the Iceland play-by-play guy when they scored that goal. It's the first time that Iceland has won a Euro match game. It's the first time they've been in a tournament this big. As I mentioned earlier, Iceland is so small that 8% of its population was in this stadium watching the game when Iceland actually scored this game-winning goal. So all I'm asking is to compare it to some of the other big moments in the NFL and say, what's up, NFL? When are we going to get on soccer's level when it comes to this kind of thing, specifically here in Jacksonville? But first, this is what we're comparing it to. Here's the call of Iceland winning this game. Now he scored. That's unbelievable stuff right there. And I've never heard quite that level of excitement in a football call, but here's some of the bigger moments from just in the last year or so in the National Football League. We'll get to the Jaguar-specific stuff here in just a moment. Last year in the NFL playoffs, a couple of big ones, including a field goal miss that would have sent Minnesota on.
Blair Walsh from 27 yards left hash. Snap good, spot down. Walsh's kick is up, and it is no good. He missed it. Are you kidding me? The season can't end like that. He missed it left. And the Seattle Seahawks are off to Charlotte. Blair Walsh missed a 27-yard field goal, and the Minnesota Vikings are going to lose 10-9.
We played great on defense all day.
I do love how just dejected it is. Mm-hmm. You know, first there's that rage right at that moment where he misses it, and then you're just angry at the guy for missing it, and then there's that just, and Seattle's going to move on. Like, I kind of, that's a pretty good call right there. Okay, the Aaron Rodgers Hail Mary. He had a couple of them last year. This is the one from the playoff game against Arizona to get him into overtime.
Rodgers in the shotgun, three receivers right, one to the left. Rodgers looks it over, starts to his left. Now he moves Starks to the right side. Snap to A-Rod. Looking downfield, being flushed. Rolling left, winds up. Rainbows it high and deep into the end zone. It's high point and it's caught. It is caught for a touchdown.
Yes!
A miracle
yes!
catch.
Jeff Janis caught
in
it.
The end zone.
Can you believe it?
Unbelievable.
Believe it.
Jeff Janis, high point of the football in the middle of the end zone. And the Packers are an extra point away from getting this thing tied.
The color guy was closer. The color guy was close to just losing his mind about the play, which is what happens with these big calls in soccer. I'd actually like to figure out a way to loop the Iceland call with that call to where he actually starts screaming and doing that whole thing that he does on the Iceland call right when Janis actually catches that ball.
I've never heard a man scream like that about any sporting event.
No.
I mean, even if I've never heard anyone do – now – that guy's a former player, right? He's a former, isn't he? Didn't he play?
Yeah.
For Iceland, he mm-hmm. played for. So he has a different level of euphoria and passion about it. But I've never ever heard anyone, not just a play-by-play, I've never heard anyone that happy about anything.
I've seen YouTube videos of fans, you know, when their team wins a championship or something like that, where they get so hyped up that they're just screaming like that.
That return, that Auburn deal with Alabama a couple of years ago, people went crazy about it.
You can see that kind of thing with the fans, but you so rarely hear it on a broadcast, which, look, like you said, this guy played for Iceland. It's like those two worlds meeting for this guy. He is a fan and a player, and it's going on at the same time where it's representing your country, which is just the perfect mix. Now let's get to a couple of Jaguars highlights. Mm-hmm. And again, it's time for this to be stepped up. Jacksonville. We'll start with the Hail Mary and Mike Thomas.
Gerard steps up. Fires. Mike Sims walk up. Knocked down.
Oh, he caught it!
Oh! Unbelievable! Mike Thomas! Touchdown, Jags! Ball game! 50 yards! Whoa!
Gus is the closest thing we got to it in America.
Gus is the man.
That is so good. Every time I hear it, I love that call. That's good stuff right there. Now, I believe we're going to hear the Sexton call. It's not like you haven't heard it 100 times by this point, but Brian Sexton on the call as Fred Taylor. He goes 90 yards against Miami.
And it's a draw again. Taylor going outside. He's at the 10. Breaks a tackle. Looking for room. Inside at the 15. Outside. There he goes. Hits a foot race. Taylor's gone. He's at the 40. He's at the 50. He's at the 40. He's at the 30. Taylor to the 20. Taylor 10. 5. Touchdown. Jacksonville. 90 yards.
It's a good call. Mm-hmm. I'm not saying that it's not a good call, but it's not. Look, Gus was close. Gus was bringing it. On the Hail Mary call.
Gus had to stop in the middle of his sentence. He goes, Mike Sims Walker, knocked down. Oh, no, he caught it.
He
already had his little Vin Scully drag ready and knocked down. Oh, no, he caught it. Yeah, that's awesome, man.
Oh, that's good stuff from Gus. Gus is getting close to that level. Gus is on that soccer level. I need more guys in America that are on that soccer level when it comes to football because we are as passionate about football as everyone else in the world is about soccer. We are. And I love to hear these kind of things. Like, we played the Spanish broadcast of the guys in Carolina.
Oh,
yeah.
Listen to these guys.
Dance!
Suéltame la pelusa, dinosaurio! Suelta la pelusa!
Pelusa por aquí, pelusa por allá, pelusa por delante, pelusa por detrás.
Is he rapping?
Oh my gosh, that's the best.
Wait a minute, was he busting, was he dropping dimes?
They sing.
Pelusa por aquí,
they sing this song.
Pelusa por delante, pelusa por detrás.
Every time that Cam Newton scores, they sing that song.
Bro.
They have a nickname for...
bars, man.
Greg Olson's nickname is Mayonnaise on the Spanish broadcast. That's what you get every time Carolina scores a touchdown. Right? Can you imagine one time in Jacksonville if the Jaguars score a touchdown and Frank Frangie screams touchdown eight times and then sings a song about the Jaguars having scored? Oh, my gosh, that would be the absolute best. I don't ever expect it to happen. I just need it notched up another level, man. I just want it notched up at least one more level. We're never going to get it on the level of that. We're never going to get it on the level of soccer. It's just not going to happen. But can we go closer to, like, Gus Johnson? Just lose your mind for half a second. I think it would be a lot of fun if we could have one of those calls. And, yeah, we would play it over and over and over again if it ever happened. The Fan Feedback Spotlight coming up next, brought to you by the Tom Bush Family of Dealerships. The question today, who is the most influential Jaguars player or coach in the organization's history? I finally saw the guy I liked for this question as far as an answer mentioned a few moments ago on Twitter. We'll get to our answers to that question here in just a moment as we roll along on a Thursday edition of Jaguars Today on 1010XL 92.5 FM.
Shotgun now for Bortles.
Follow every play, interview, and press conference.
He made plays all over the field.
On the home of the Jaguars, 1010XL 92.5 FM.
This is Deontay the Bronze Bomber Wilder, WBC Heavyweight Champion of the World, and you're listening to 1010XL 92.5 FM.
I can see, Wig, you're a little jealous I got to talk to the champ two times, right?
Yes, I am jealous. I ain't jealous of that beat, though.
Yeah?
Is that Mobb Deep? Is that Shook Ones?
Yes, it is.
Oh, my goodness. That's one of the greatest hip-hop grooves of all time, bro.
That's pretty good stuff.
Part two.
It's pretty good stuff. And it fits Deontay, I got a feeling.
Mm-hmm. He does shake people up, though.
Yeah.
He'll talk to anybody. Anybody. Deontay is a real personable guy.
Deontay has been one of my favorite interviews the last couple years out there. Like, I'm really glad I got to catch up with him again this year. 2 years ago, it was kind of a fortunate accident that we wound up talking to Deontay. Like, he just had a handler walking around the room. They just walked up to her table and say, "Hey, you want to talk to the champ?" We're like, "Champ of what?" Like, we're like, "What are you talking about?" He's like, "Oh, we got the first American heavyweight champ in the world. He's here right now." We're like, "Who is it?" Because I wasn't paying any attention at the time. And it's Deontay Wilder. We're like, "Yeah, we'll sit down and talk to the heavyweight boxing champion of the world. Why wouldn't we want to talk to that guy?" And he was unbelievable. Like, just all that personality, and it showed up again this year. We asked him to do a liner, and he was like, "Can I put my own thing on it?" And we're like, "Do whatever you want, Deontay. I'm not going to tell the champ no." So
it looks like a basketball player, too, doesn't
he? He does. He does. He's a little...
So what did he...
Did he what?
What did he do? What did he do when he put his own spin on it?
Well, it was like, we just write down, you know, "I'm Deontay Wilder, you're listening to Jaguars Today," or whatever. He's like, "This is heavyweight champ." Like, you know, he's just got his own way of doing that kind of thing.
This
which is
Deontay the Bronze Bomber Wilder, WBC heavyweight champion of the world, and you're listening to 1010XL 92.5 FM.
Yeah, like, he did a really good job with that. Like, Blake Bortles, we had sit down and we did an interview with him, and then we're like, "Hey, Blake, can you give us a liner?" And he's like, "Hey, this is Blake Bortles, you know, the quarterback of the Jacksonville Jaguars. You're listening to Jaguars." We're like, "Can you put a little something on it, Blake?" He's like, "Oh, okay." And so
he, to be fair, it was probably 7 a.m.
Oh, no, I'm not blaming Blake. It was just like, it's like he almost didn't know what we were really doing with it. And we were like, "Can you get a little something out of you, Blake? Just a little something." And he's like, "Oh, okay." And the liner he actually gave us is fine. It's good stuff. But it was kind of funny, like, the difference between Deontay, who's like, "Yeah, I'll give you a liner." And Blake's like, "All right, what do you want?" Like, just the difference between the two guys. The Fan Feedback Spotlight brought to you by the Tom Bush Family of Dealerships. Today we're asking, who's the most influential Jaguars player or coach of all time? And we got one guy, obviously the dominant answer is Tom Coughlin. And there are a lot of reasons to say Coughlin. Not only did he build this thing as an expansion franchise that had as much success as you could expect from a team in its first 3 or 4 years in the National Football League, from especially that run from like 96 to 99 was fantastic. From Seth, he said on Facebook, "I think Coughlin set an example for future players and coaches when he set up the J Fund, which is another obviously very important thing. When you talk about influence, it doesn't just have to be football. And what Tom Coughlin has done with the J Fund, as Dempsey says every year when we get the opportunity to do the radiothon, Tom Coughlin, with everything that he's accomplished as a football coach and two championships, everything that he's done, he's got a Hall of Fame career as an NFL coach. His legacy is going to be the J Fund. And it's incredible what he's done. So I would agree that Tom Coughlin's probably the answer for the most influential. We got that a lot. Cameron said I'd have to say Paul Posluszny. He's always stayed humble and given respect to everything about the game, been a good leader as well.
I don't think a lot of people know that, though.
Right.
And that's what influence is. It's the effect that you've had on people that people know about, not just a small group of folks.
Sure. And I think there is, to some degree, any personal interaction you've had with these guys, that is influence.
Mm-hmm.
Right? And for you, the answer may be different than it is for everybody else because of the interactions you've had with a specific player. And I know, for me, it's influenced a little bit by that, my answer to this question. But Tom Coughlin would be at the top of my list. Between what he's accomplished and the J Fund, it's just incredible. The other two guys that came to mind, at least for me, are Jeff Loggeman. And Jeff is on that list for me, not only because he was a part of this team in 96, everything like that, but I'm an analytical guy. And with football, I just never knew how to really break into like being analytical with it. Mm-hmm. I'm a guy who reads a lot. It's actually the reason we have this question up today is because I read a book that made me think about it from a Jaguars perspective, who has been the most influential. And for me, Loggeman, and I've never told this to his face, but him coming in on Tuesdays with Mike and I for the last couple years has opened a door for me as far as analyzing the game of football from a different perspective that I never had before. We fans, we didn't even have the opportunity to watch any coaches tape until the very, very recent couple of years when the NFL,
the All 22,
yeah, right, allowed you to actually go back and watch that kind of thing. And I'm trying to learn what I'm watching basically when I'm doing that. And Jeff Loggeman's been a huge influence with that for me. But the other guy who I didn't see mentioned much, I think I saw him mentioned one time, that I think belongs on this list too, not only because of what he does off the field and remains in this Jacksonville community doing things and has been a guest on this show from time to time, Donovan Darius.
I was just thinking the same thing.
Donovan Darius, and it's not only because of that, but because of the way that he played the strong safety position, I think brought kind of that box safety back into football.
Mm-hmm.
And the other thing is, when you're talking about most influential, Donovan Darius is the reason for the franchise tag rules we have. It's what the Jacksonville Jaguars did to Darius when everyone was trying to figure out exactly what was going to go on with the franchise tag, because it was brought into play to be something where, you know, John Elway doesn't get out of Denver, right? He's been here for 12 years. We don't want to lose our quarterback. So you give these teams the option to say, this is our franchise player, because he is the franchise player. And what teams started doing was using the franchise tag like they do today to instead just hold on to a player that they didn't want to lose. Mm-hmm. And it could be a kicker. It could be a punter, because they're just willing to pay that one-time price tag to not have to deal with the headache of trying to get another guy. Well, Darius was in a position where he was set to get paid by the Jacksonville Jaguars, and they franchised him not once, not twice, but three times. And then the NFL put in the rules where you can't do this to players anymore. You can't hold on to them that way without the money going out the roof when you want to do it that third time. And so to me, Donovan Darius belongs on that list.
Yes, and I would be remiss if I didn't mention all of the things he actually does do in the community.
Unreal.
Because, he is one of those guys that really gets it. He's humble. He's actually reached out to me a couple of times to do things, little small things, just to make a connection with this person or that person. But he's the real deal, man. He's not doing it for attention. Donovan Darius is the real deal. And there are a lot of guys like that. Someone that will be on this list, if you ask 2 years from now, would be Rasheen Matthews, because he's the same way.
Yep.
Rasheen is another one of those guys that has really remained humble, and he gets it. And it helps that he's from here. That's what gives him that little bit of an edge going forward now that he's retired. The fact that he's a Jacksonville native and he really, really, really has the heart and the mind to not only affect – he didn't just affect the team on the field, but he has the heart and the mind to do it off the field. But I would agree Tom Coughlin is number one on that list. It's not because I talked to him. I had a really, really nice conversation with him. But it is because of the J Fund. It is because of every time you ask a Jacksonville Jaguars football fan about his best memories, it all goes back to when Tom Coughlin was the coach. When you talk about the best players, it goes back to when Tom Coughlin was the coach. Those moments that this team has had were all because of him. And I remember when he was here, fans thought he was a tyrant and all of this. I've heard from numerous players that, yeah, it was tough. But you ask Tom McManus about Tom Coughlin, and all his whole face just lights up.
Yeah,
you know?
Yeah, I'm absolutely with you. And another guy that I didn't see mentioned at all that I think can qualify to this list, it depends on how much credit you give to him for what's going on, but Gus Bradley, as the defensive coordinator in Seattle, kind of made the cover three cool again.
Mm-hmm.
And that was something that had been in and out of the NFL, and he kind of remade it in his own kind of image. It hasn't worked so well here in Jacksonville, but obviously in Seattle, with the pieces they have in place up there, it's been unbelievable. And I think Gus Bradley does get some credit for that as well. Hopefully it starts paying dividends here in Jacksonville in the very near future.
I know we got to close out the show here, Tony, but you asked last segment for a little mix-up between the Iceland call and the Jeff Janis Hail Mary.
Oh,
and
I've got
that. You asked and you shall receive. So would you like to play that as we end the show here?
Yeah, let's do this.
Snap to A-Rod, looking downfield, being flushed, rolling left, winds up, rainbows it high and deep into the end zone. It's high point and it's caught. It is caught for a touchdown.
Yes!
A miracle catch.
Yes! Can you believe it?
Unbelievable!
Believe it!
Jeff Janis, high point of the football in the middle of the end zone, and the Packers are an extra point away from getting this thing tied.
It's even better than I thought it would be.
Oh man, that's awesome!
That's great stuff, Tyler. I absolutely love that.
Sticks is the truth, man.
Oh, Wig, I had so much fun today, man. Hopefully, we get a chance to do this again soon.
Yep.
Get
we
you
will,
in
man.
Do some more Jaguars today. This was fun.
We will, and I'm glad you. I'm humbled by the fact that you invited me to come in and do this. And even Dempsey checked in before he left and said, "You coming in on Thursday, right?" You know, Tony's got this, man. Go climb some mountains.
That's right.
Or
do your thing
up in Montana.
Do your thing. Brent Martineau will be joining me tomorrow, so that'll do it for us today here on Jaguars Today. For T Wig, for Tyler Devitt, for everyone that we heard there during the play-by-play calls as well, for an absent Mike Dempsey, I'm Tony Smith. We'll welcome in the boys of Midday Chalk next here on 1010 XL 92.5 FM.
Pelusa por aquí, pelusa por allá, pelusa por delante, pelusa por detrás.
You guys have a good day. Peace.
Jaguars Today from the Jacksonville Orthopedic Institute Studios at Everbank Field.